I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is the top of the week, and that means it is yet again time for our weekly Strange News segment. You know, I mentioned this in the past. We can sometimes have a tough time distilling all the events of the week down to just three things. But here, I think, we're very much at an impasse. We know about the events in the Middle East that are happening as we record. Also, the events in Colombia that are happening as we record. So we want to thank everybody for writing in on this. We are aware of these. They each warrant a full episode, I would argue, on their own instead of, 15 minutes, which is typically what we aim for in our Strange News segments. But today, we're talking about several things that may have escaped your attention in the mainstream news. One definitely didn't, especially if you're a longtime listener of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. There may be something big on the way in the skies next month. We have a story of a local vigilante. Well, they're local to, the people who live around them. But for us, they're just a super vigilante. And then a story about systemic racism and how it affects people in the modern day, and something a lot of folks may not have considered yet. Where do you guys want to start?
I'm kind of leaning towards real superhero. I don't know. That's just me.
But sure. Yeah, why not?
I like this one.
Got a place to start as any. Yeah. So apparently for the last 8 years, a real life vigilante. Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you guys think Batman's a superhero? He has gadgets. He doesn't really have. He's not blessed with any
He does have a superpower.
What, yeah, he's detective a billionaire, skills? Right?
He's a time traveler. Money is value over time.
Okay, well, that's we'll have to agree to disagree on that. But to me, you know, Batman, I think I'm not like alone in this, but Batman's always been important and an interesting guy, and able to parlay those millions and billions of dollars, however many he has in imaginary money, into the stuff of crime fighting, you know, legend. And that's really important. Because he is putting himself at risk, knowing that he is but a man who could be struck down and killed, as is a dude in Little Rock, Arkansas, who's apparently been walking amongst the citizens of Little Rock for going on 8 years now, but keeping very under the radar. And he goes by the name, it's pretty cool, Shadow Vision. And yeah, he's got some kind of Batman-esque qualities. He's got these gauntlets that have little fins on the side, kind of like Batman's gauntlets, you know, the little blades. He appears to rock some kind of like riot gear type equipment, not including the samurai swords that he has in a few images that I've seen. But, you know, he's got handcuffs, kind of utility belt, looks almost like a SWAT guy, but he's got a really cool ballistic looking helmet. Almost like, you remember those characters in the Mortal Kombat game, Cyrex and the other one? There were two kind of identical looking robots. One of them was called Smoke, I believe, later, but that was an addition. Yeah, it kind
of
looks like
Smoke's more
that.
Of a ninja, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or they redid it.
They redid him as one of those androids as well. I just remember he would, like, shoot bombs out of his chest, and he could, like, well, they all did that. But anyway, this guy's
not to mention he's rocking size on his pants.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. The you're talking about Shadow Vision?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. I haven't seen a picture with the size. So definitely, you know, has some double threat Ninja Turtle weaponry in addition to this kind of sci-fi, you know, Judge Dredd kind of helmet and handcuffs. And he also has a Facebook page boasting a not incredibly unimpressive for a niche kind of local vigilante, about 5,000 followers on his Facebook page. But here's the thing. He's got a nemesis, fellas. That's what does it take to really make a superhero come out of the shadows? As we know, like with the Joker and Batman, you got to have a good nemesis. And his also has a pretty spooky nickname. It's a pretty basic and descriptive, like many serial killer names often are, but it's the Little Rock Slasher, who has apparently been wreaking havoc on, you know, and spreading a campaign of fear around Little Rock with random serial stabbings, several of which have resulted in death. Now, I don't know, guys, what do you think? Like, two deaths out of a handful of incidents, is that a serial killer? Something about a cooling off period I've been reading about. A little bit more of a spree killer, it sounds to me, but I'm not sure. I think the jury's still out on whether he's a true serial killer or not at this point. So, I mean, based on what we know, it sounds like we would definitely need more information to dub this person a proper serial killer, but I guess that's why the press has labeled him the slasher, because he's definitely slashing. There's no question about that. But on his Facebook page, Shadow Vision issued a stern warning to the Little Rock Slasher, saying that he was keeping an eye on him. This is a threat to you, he says. When I find you, I will show you what I do to serial killers. I am hunting you right now.
He also claims to have caught two serial killers in the past, unsubstantiated, I believe, before he came here, because he is not a U.S. native. Is
he's
that
not. He's actually Scottish. And apparently, I haven't found any footage of him. I'm not sure if he's talked directly to the press, but he certainly posed for some pictures, because he's got this one where he's, you know, got his katanas out and is in like full ninja pose. Quite a few images of this gentleman, I've heard that he has a very thick Scottish accent, which would probably make it a little hard to be like the one, like, you know, obviously Scottish dude in Little Rock. If people knew him socially, it'd kind of be, you know, kind of a dead giveaway. Not only did he claim that he caught two other serial killers, he claims to have exterminated them.
Wow.
Those are the words he used on his Facebook, but we can't really verify that. He also claims to have stopped several armed robberies. So, yeah, here's another, like these photos by Brian Chilson with the Arkansas Times are all in the same location and quite a few different poses. So imagine that he did speak with him. Although most of the quotes here are attributed to his Facebook page. So yeah, it's interesting. Like, there's a whole section in the article about his origin story. And he claims to have specifically targeted Little Rock because he heard about the crime and then the slashings, and that he felt that the people of Little Rock were losing hope, and he wanted to come and restore hope and, you know, peace to the streets of Little Rock, Arkansas.
You know, what's interesting is that he is not the only person living a life as a purported costumed vigilante. He's got some critics in Little Rock who point out that there are aspects of his self-reported story that are unsubstantiated. Some people have called him a con artist, but I don't know if there's enough evidence for that. I do know I don't know if we ever talked about this. Matt, it may have been you and I off air or something. But there are people, not just in the U.S., but in the U.K. and Europe as well, who dress up in costume to be vigilantes of some sort, superheroes of some sort. My favorite is a guy who just goes around cutting off boots on cars, you know, that immobilize cars that are parked illegally. I think he's in England. That's all he does. But he's documented doing that.
I can get behind that. I mean, we've talked about this. I feel like booting cars is like basically, you know, unlawful seizure of property. So more power to him. This guy, he also has an Instagram account, real life superhero Shadow Vision, bit of a mouthful. And he says that he occasionally will team up with a few other local Arkansas North Little Rock vigilantes, one by the name of Master Legend, and then also one by the name of Anti-Hero. But mostly, according to this article, again, by Austin Bailey, published on May 7th of 2021, he works alone. But there's a twist in the story, gentlemen. This masked vigilante, while clearly very quick on his feet, and all about, you know, fighting crime and protecting the vulnerable. He is carless at the moment, and he has a PayPal link on his site to help support Shadow Vision by donating to his buy a new car fund. He says, my patrols are pretty limited due to not having a vehicle. I am raising money for a vehicle so I can patrol more areas and help the citizens of NLR and surrounding areas feel safe. So if anyone could donate, it would be highly appreciative.
He specifically wants a Scion.
He wants a Scion XD because he says they're agile and can take turns at high speed. And he's currently accepting donations via Cash App and PayPal. I'm you know, giggling a little bit just because the whole, like, superhero doesn't have a car thing is a little funny. But, I mean, the guy's heart seems like he's in the right place. And there is a $20,000 reward for the any information leading to the capture of the slasher. So it is a serious business. And I imagine, you know, he seems to be targeting old folks too. So, I mean, it's no laughing matter.
I'm trying to imagine, like, crowdfunded superhero. I bet a lot of people could get behind that. If it's specifically for, you know, purchasing a vehicle or something, I don't know. That feels a little less palatable maybe. But if it's just, you know, the way you would support any YouTuber or podcaster via like Patreon or something, you know, I can imagine communities getting behind even just the, I don't know, the thrill of knowing that there's a superhero prowling the streets in your neighborhood. I don't know.
Well, also the anonymity is an issue because of the laws regarding vigilantism in the U.S. You'll see rumors on Facebook or Reddit or wherever you want to dig that he does have the tacit support of the police force, which means at the very least he's not interfering with their actions, one would imagine. But also, yeah, to the point about having a noticeable accent, assuming that is his real accent, which it doesn't necessarily need to be, that would make him identifiable. The fact that he's getting so much international press, he's in The Independent, he's in a couple of other places, that also makes it a little bit tougher to evade. If you are listening to this and you're thinking, I would like to be a costumed vigilante, I would read up on your local laws. I would find something specifically to make your cause. And then I would also consider the proper steps to stay anonymous. Because, like, if this guy has a phone on him when he's doing this, then the authorities know who he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just not stopping him and may indeed look at him as an eccentric. But a lot of the locals, some who have called him a con man, especially for the car thing, another contingent of locals do believe he's legit and they like him for one reason or another. Whether, even if it's not specifically stopping crime, they think it's a cool look for the city.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you go to his Facebook page, which I was incorrect, it wasn't on Instagram, I'd just been reposted the thing that I saw, but it's Real Life Superhero Shadow Vision. His handle is at Ancient Demons. I'm not sure what that's showing up on Facebook, but that seems like an Instagram handle. But he's got a lot of pictures posing with like just local folks, you know, that are asking for selfies. And then there's a really interesting thing on here. It's a like a poster for a concert at a place called Terminal Nation. And also like an art show. It looks like a fundraiser of some sort. But it looks like it's sponsored by him and his colleague, Master Legend, who looks to be wearing kind of like a bucket hat situation and also has some gauntlets and some like, you know, knee pads and stuff. But I'm not quite sure what the purpose of this event is. There's a bunch of metal bands, like pretty big one, Pallbearer. They're pretty famous, but this dude is very metal. And also they're going to show a screening of Kiss Meets the Phantom, which is a classic, hilarious, campy Kiss movie. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. You don't hear much about stuff like this. Masked vigilantes. And Arkansas, Little Rock, is the kind of the last place I thought something like this would come out of. But interesting story to keep an eye on.
For sure. You guys make a lot of great points, Ben, especially if you are easily identifiable by law enforcement, then you're also probably easily identifiable by somebody who wants to, I don't know, do harm to the local superhero to get some cred for themselves or something. That seems a little dangerous. I mean, even if you've got weapons on you at all times as this character, it's dangerous out there alone. So I can totally see why the concept of avengering up with, you know, Master Legend and anti-hero is probably a good idea, actually. And working alone as a vigilante, probably not a great idea.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I've been fascinated by this for years, right? The appeal of maybe not something like Batman, but because money is a superpower, but something like the Punisher is that it is not something that would be impossible for people to do. So I remember, I swear, we could have done this earlier on this show, or maybe it was some other show I do. There are these great lists of people who are self-purported costume superheroes, none of whom have, you know, biological superpowers. But there's also, if you want to get a little bit of a more fun kick on a more fun perspective on this without worrying about the very real consequences of citizen arrest laws, check out the reality show Who Wants to Be a Superhero. Do you guys remember that? It's on Sci-Fi. Stan Lee hosted. Shout out to Stan. It's no longer a business, but it was a fun watch if you're into reality TV and you want a Kardashian break.
Was that one that involved real life superpowers, like the two-part episode that we did so many years ago that people seem to really dig? I remember there was a Stan Lee show curated by him that talked about real life superpowers. This one, like, more of a competition? I'm not familiar.
Yeah. Who Wants to Be a Superhero is, again, a reality show that was like people would do any number of trials to prove that they had superhero traits, and no one there had biological superpowers. There are real biological superpowers, as Noel mentioned. Super strength is real, unbreakable bones, weather resistance. There are rumors that I could never verify in both Vietnam and Australia of people who can go for prolonged lengths of time without sleep. That's my favorite. And there's super tasters, super seers, you know, tetrachromats. Like, there are real superpowers. Unfortunately, there are legal and ethical constraints about experimenting on human beings. I understand why they're there, that prevent us from farming out these powers to other populations at this moment.
And Ben, I was confused, not confused, but there is another Stan Lee show called Stan Lee's Superhumans that does deal with folks that actually have those abilities you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I think they had to keep a lot of them anonymous. Like, one of the kids who had superpower or had super strength is, you know, ripped, but was like 6 years old at the time. So they're not going to publish that. But it's on the way.
Right on. Well, why don't we pop to a quick sponsor break, and then we'll come right back with a little bit more strange news.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this nine-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we're back. Now we're going to jump from Shadow Vision to a very real systemic problem that many, many people are dealing with. Maybe you are dealing with it. Maybe you have yet to even think about dealing with this problem, but it's something that you should be aware of for the time when you're ready to tackle attempting to own a home or to sell a home. And again, that may not even be in the cards for you right now, but at least you'll be armed with this information moving forward. So there was an article coming out of USA Today. They were not the first people to publish about this story, but it came from them pretty recently. I believe it was May 13th. So we're going to start with this story, then we're going to move backwards in time a little bit. The story is titled, Black Homeowner Had a White Friend Stand In for Third Appraisal and Her Home Value Doubled. Okay, So there's going to be a lot of stuff we kind of have to define here as we begin through this process. If you've never gone about buying or selling a home, you need to know that an appraisal on a home is just essentially the value of a home that is given to you by a specific person who works for a company that all they do is appraise homes. So they decide, they give valuations for a home. And the most important thing, the most important aspect currently to the appraisal of a home is looking at comparable homes that have been sold near the home that is getting appraised. That it's at least on paper, that's what it's supposed to be. So let's say wherever you live in your neighborhood, you're trying to sell your house. An appraiser is going to look at five roughly other homes that are very as close to you as possible that have been sold recently that are common to your home. Like how many bedrooms are there? How many bathrooms are there? What's the square footage of the home? That's really what they're looking at.
Yeah. They're also looking a little bit through past trends and a little bit into what they see as current market trends. Mm-hmm. So an appraisal can be fluid. Well, that's the other part. But the big part I think that we need to emphasize that you had pointed out, Matt, is that these appraisers are professionals. They do not have a stake in buying or selling your home. They're supposed to be unbiased, just doing that one job. And the reason this is important is, well, you're saying, like, why are they doing this? Out of the goodness of their hearts? Obviously not. There's an appraisal fee that's usually paid by the person who is borrowing from a bank to get a mortgage to buy a house. And then if they – and the reason they're doing this is a safety, right? If the appraiser comes back and says, actually, you know that house that you're putting a $250,000 mortgage on – that house is only worth, I don't know, a ludicrous example would be like $120,000. And so the person would say, heck no, I'm not paying that much. Thanks. That money I gave you was worth it, appraiser. That's when everything works out well.
Yes, very true. So essentially an appraiser is a middle person between the bank and the thing that's the entity that's going to have to loan money or, you know, pay money at some point between that entity and the person that owns the home. You can get appraisal for a lot of reasons. To refinance a home, if you just want to get some equity out of it, that means like some money. If you've paid a lot of money into a home and you still owe the bank a lot of money for it, but you've, you know, your home is appreciated in value, it's gotten more expensive, then you can use some of that money to do things like improve your home. And then it will hopefully get more and more expensive down the line when you decide to sell it. There are all kinds of things you can do if you get equity in your home. It's like having extra money, essentially, according to the bank. Now, let's jump into the story a little bit, and then we can probably go back to the 1930s and really talk about where appraisals came from. I think it'd be worth it to get into the story first and then talk about the history. So let's jump through here. The individual that the USA Today article is about, her name is Carlette Duffy, and she had gotten her home appraised twice, and she felt, you know, just looking at the other homes in her neighborhood, looking at what she knew about the market, she had this weird feeling that these appraisals had been super low. So the first appraisal valued her home at $125,000, and then she, you know, she knew that was low, so she got it appraised again. And it was valued at $110,000, lower than the first appraisal even. So she felt like maybe there was something going on here. As much as we don't want to admit it, there are biases that still affect a lot of institutions, a lot of large portions of both the United States and the world at large, where there are biases against any person of color when it comes to buying and selling a home. And that doesn't mean it's everywhere. That doesn't mean it's every individual, you know, every realtor, every appraiser, every banker. But there is a through line that has continued for decades and decades where there seems to be an inequality when it comes to how much a home is worth or said to be worth when it is owned by a white family or owned by a family of color. So Carlette suspected this might be what was occurring. So what she did, instead of, you know, calling up an appraiser or talking to somebody on the phone, she communicated only via email to a third appraisal company, a third appraiser. Then in her home, she removed anything that she considered signals of her race, of her, you know, the culture that she identifies with. She removed all of that stuff. So it was just as, I don't know, blank as you could possibly make it. Then she had a white husband of a friend be there physically at the home when the appraiser came to her house to look at it and decide how much it was going to cost. And this time, the home was appraised at $259,000. I mean, that's over it's double, right? It's over $125,000 more than that first appraisal.
This is only one example.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. So this is one person that went through this and essentially tricked the system. But again, imagine how horrible that is. Remove yourself from a situation, all signs of yourself and your life from a situation. And then you find out, oh, without me, this home, according to this person or this group or this company, is worth twice as much when I'm not here.
Yeah, that's the issue, Matt, because there's an excellent New York Times article from 2020 that talks about a nearly identical situation with a different price point with the couple Abina and Alex Horton, and they had estimated their house would appraise around $450,000 in Jacksonville, Florida. But then their first appraisal came back with a value of $330,000. And so Mrs. Horton, who was an attorney, she did exactly what you're describing. And this may be a story that Carlette was aware of earlier, does exactly what you're describing there. And then additionally, she and her husband have a six-year-old kid, right? So they take the kid out to Target and she leaves her husband, who is white, alone at home to answer the door for the appraisal. And they talk about how she replaced all the paintings. She took books by black authors off the shelves. And then boom, this new appraiser gave their home a value of $465,000, which is kind of in line with what you're saying. That was more than 40%. So it was almost a 50% increase. This is systemic. This is an active conspiracy, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And what's happening, I guarantee you Carlette saw what was going on, because ABC7, that's based in Northern California, has been doing an amazing job putting this stuff out there. So getting stories from individuals and families that have been going through this and just showing how often it occurs. It's really intense. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. There's one reporter, got it right here. His name is Julian Glover. He's a reporter and anchor with ABC7 there. It's News Bay Area. He's just been going through story after story of this appraisal discrimination. And you can find him on Twitter. It's Julian, J-U-L-I-A-N-G, as in Gator. Sorry. And then ABC7. That's on Twitter. And you can you can reach out to him if you've got a story, which is really what's been happening. People saw one of these original stories, which was about a very similar thing with a family going through this. This family put like $150,000 worth of work into a home. Noel, when you owned your house, you did quite a bit of work on it, right?
Well, it was, I was just about to mention, like, in the same way that an appraiser is hired to do a particular job, it's often tied to the loan in some way. It's the same thing with an inspection. You always hear about scams potentially being run by, like, maybe the inspector is not paid off, but like there are possibilities where there can be fraud even in an inspection, as there obviously are with appraisals, because there are things that can be overlooked, or it's easy for a place to pass inspection and actually have tons of pretty serious problems, which my place did, just like rot that had been covered up with like Bondo on a deck, and like horrible, horrible roof problems. I had to learn how to replace shingles and all this stuff. But all of this stuff, I think, is exacerbated right now by what's going on with COVID and like the increased demand for housing and this kind of feeding frenzy to just sell as many houses as quickly as possible and make as much money as possible. I'm wondering, though, why would the house be like, how does that benefit, you know, the bank to undervalue the house? Like, wouldn't they get more money if people were taking a loan out to buy a more expensive house? If this family was trying to sell, and I'm trying to understand the motivation. Bank. Okay, well, maybe I missed the point then. Who does it benefit?
In many cases, these are homeowners or people who have a mortgage, you know, paying a bank, where they are attempting to either refinance their home or they're attempting to get, you know, like see real equity in their home so they can get money, you know, to do other things. So really it is in the bank's interest to say, no, it's not worth that much, actually. You still owe 72% of your loan. You can't get whatever, you can't get X out of your home yet.
But the banks don't control the appraisers.
That's right. No. I understand that. But that's the issue, though, right? So we're saying this is just in general a cultural bias. Like, how does it behoove the appraiser to offer a lower appraisal?
Well, to really understand, you kind of have to go back through history. Like I was saying, the 1930s. This is around the time when our friend FDR brought about the New Deal and a lot of things that did help lower and middle class families, but there were also a lot of problems with a lot of the things put forward. You can jump to, there's an article from homelight.com. It is titled, "What Does Racism Have to Do with Real Estate Appraisals?" And in here, it gives you a quick, really, really quick history lesson here about this. But it talks about how when Roosevelt was president, there was, quote, a fundamental restructuring of the housing market that occurred there. And I'll just read this to you. The government made homes more affordable by changing the average mortgage term. So if you're going out there and trying to buy a home right now, you're probably going to get a 15-year loan, a 30-year loan, something in, you know, the decades, essentially, of you making payments every month to pay off your massive loan that you're going to have to take out because homes are dang expensive. But it used to be, gosh, what was it? It was like a 6-year loan, a 3-year loan you would get on a home.
Yeah, 15 previously would have been like long, right?
Yes, exactly.
15 would have been almost unheard of.
And that meant that a lot more people got access to buying a home because now I don't have as much money at one time as somebody who used to be able to buy a home, but now I can still afford a home by making these smaller payments, just a lot more of them.
So to a degree, it democratizes the ownership class or the ability to get into the ownership class, which pre-1930s was a different story. But of course, this occurs in the context of even more prevalent open racism. I think, are we getting to redlining?
We are getting to redlining. But the whole point is that it is
there's a way to get there, I think.
Yeah, but it increases the ability for people to join that ownership class or the homeowners class, the landowners class, if you want to separate it out that way. But what it does is it separates groups into neighborhoods, essentially, or, you know, really, that's what it is. It puts boundaries around where people live. And there was this whole concept that there needed to be a formal assessment of the value of a home. And there were these things that were mocked up and then eventually created and set in stone, at least for a time, that were these maps, these color-coded maps that were created essentially of neighborhoods. And these maps, often referred to, people call them red line maps, redlining maps, they ranked neighborhoods with like the most value or the least value. And it kind of changed colors depending on what it was. And the neighborhoods that were largely, if not only, occupied by white middle class families were considered the, you know, the top tier, essentially.
Creme de la creme. And this is before the Fair Housing Act of 1968. So this was all, not only was this all treated as though it were legal, but also often the people who were victimized by this had no real means of recourse. You know what I mean? Like, can you afford the lawyer fees? Can you afford the inevitable discrimination by law enforcement, which will also not get in trouble for doing very evil shit to you?
Yeah. But the problem, the real, real problem with this, I mean, like Ben said, in the 60s, I think in 1968, it changed a little bit. At least part of the processes changed. But the problem is that everybody started from that one place when you're talking about home appraisals, home values in neighborhoods. So when a home is initially valued at $30,000 and you're living in this part of the neighborhood, then you have the same stinking house. Let's say it's the same builder, the same everything, but it's in this neighborhood. And that home is worth $120,000. If you start there and now you move throughout time and that home began at that lower price and this home began at this higher price, it really puts anybody who buys that home at a disadvantage and anybody who buys the better home at an advantage.
I'm sorry if I'm missing this still, but like if the family already owns the house, they're trying to appraise the house at a lower cost. Like what, like the nefarious intent behind that? They already own the house, is to hopefully they'll just leave.
And wait, then what?
The house, like, yeah, well, no, I'm asking you, like, I mean, if they're assessing the house because the person's black at a lower value, like how does that feed into this idea of like resurgence of redlining?
Well, in a weird way, whether the person making the appraisal is aware of it or it's just something that's happening, the appraiser makes choices about which homes to compare the existing home to, right? And maybe,
and it doesn't always have to be the home next door, because there are multiple variables.
What seems to be happening is that some people, whether they know it or not, and some because they do know it, are choosing, or accidentally because of whatever practice, they are appraising these homes at a much lower value because of what they're comparing them to.
Well, there may also be a proprietary system used by an appraiser. This is the big deal. In my opinion, this is just my opinion. I am not an appraiser, nor do I kick it heavy with appraisers when we're not on air. You know, I mean, I don't roll with a ton of appraisers. It's not my clique. But it seems like the best thing to do would be to transparently publish the rubric or the variables that these appraisers use. Some companies may have a specific, you know, almost automated method, right, where you just plug in the following values into some equation resulting in X, right? And one of those values may be something about demographic information. Do want to point out, this is not just, this is, you know, Matt, like you're saying, people of color. So this is not just the black population of the U.S., right? This is pretty much the entirety of the non-white population of the U.S. or non-white passing, because this does look like just what Mac on Always Sunny would call an ocular assessment. And this has real results when you consider that the 2018 Brookings Institute study, which found that that values of houses located in majority non-white neighborhoods were costing homeowners an average of $48,000 evaluation. How based entirely on who lives in a house, no matter what their job is. That's the other thing. It's not like necessarily their income. It's just what the appraiser thinks of their skin color. This led to a $22,000 decline in house prices on average for black and Latin populations from 1980 to 2015, while the average home value in predominantly, you know, quote unquote white neighborhoods rose by $73,000. Like, it can be an unconscious bias, one by like person by person, appraiser by appraiser, but that doesn't make it any less real nor any less systemic. This is bad.
It's really bad. And it affects, it's one piece, but it really does affect everything. Because if you if you look at Zillow, if anybody's ever looked for a house on Zillow or thought about looking at your own home on Zillow, or, you know, even if you're renting, you've probably checked out Zillow. It doesn't, like, check out Zillow or some other similar, you know, app or and or website that looks at the prices of homes, because there are so many criteria that go into the value of a home. There really are. And a lot of it has to do with the schools that are districted for that address, the other things that are available in the area, but a lot of it's kind of just invisible there. It's just, wow, this is a really expensive area. Oh, wow, this is a pretty cheap area. Some of it is unquantifiable. It just seems weird.
For sure. But it's like, I mean, what's gentrification? Like, you know, gentrification has a connotation to it that's bad. You know, the idea that you're forcing lower income people out because, you know, higher income people are like blazing the trail to like improve these rundown parts of town. There, to me, gentrification has an inherently somewhat potentially racist quality to it at times. Would you agree, or am I overthinking it?
Yeah, I think we're on board there. For sure. Because it comes down to tax dollars that go into the local government that can then fund all this other stuff to make it a nice neighborhood, blah, 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 blah. But it, what I'm saying is it, all of it kind of affects the other part, the other things in the society, right? It's where you end up having such inequality in different groups of people who live right next to each other. It's awful. I'm not the right person to talk about this. Just raising my hand to say that, but I would just say it's something that is worth keeping your eye on and being aware of. And there are a few things you can do if you're ever experiencing anything like this. There are people you can reach out to. There are fair housing advocates all over the place. You can find them in your state, wherever you live. Specifically in California, there's the Fair Housing Advocates of Northern California who've been instrumental to help. To helping a lot of these families get a new appraisal of their home and, you know, coming to terms with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which is really who you have to put a formal complaint in with when something like this happens. And there's this thing called a reconsideration of value that you can petition for, and you can get a lot of times if you think you're a victim of somebody giving you a massively low appraisal on your home. Anyway, there's things you can do. And like I said, reach out to Julian Glover if you got a story, because, man, they're going ham over there at ABC7, just writing about this every month.
You know, I think the steps are pretty clear, a good way to fight this. I don't know if it'll happen. Publish all appraisal data from every appraiser, you know, make it searchable. Right. You should be, if you're getting someone to appraise your home, you should be able to look at their history of how they have appraised houses or any house. And I'm sure there are numerous reasons why we can't have that sort of transparency. But that sort of transparency would inarguably help these people on a local level who are getting swindled for no reason at all, no compelling reason. Because that kind of change only happens when it's more profitable for the people in power to make that change. I would say right now, if you find yourself in this situation, as Matt said, reach out to the press. And also, while you're reaching out, go ahead and reach out to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Reach out to HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development as well. They have dedicated departments that are supposed to help combat these things. It's just they don't have as much visibility as they should, you know, especially like when you're buying or selling a home, it's such a stressful experience, you know, it can be really tough. But I also want to commend all the people who refuse to take this lying down, all the people who refuse to take this in a horizontal and or prone position.
There you go. Just keep in mind, there's a story out of the ABC7 where one family got an appraisal of an extra $500,000 worth of value in their home after they got it reappraised. And it was because they faked having a white family live in that home rather than them.
Make that appraisal stuff public. Make it public. It's the only way.
There's a Reddit thread that jokes about like, there's some people in there joking, hey, need some white friends to pose as you so you can get lots more money on your house. Just send me a message. I'll show up. I'll work for beer and pizza. That would be a really interesting side model while the whole industry corrects itself.
It's tough, though, because you can only do so many houses before you get recognized.
It's true.
You gotta do discussions.
you just have to rotate throughout, you know, the United States, really. Just rotate everybody. I don't know. It's just it's crazy. It's really crazy.
Speaking of the industry correcting itself, I mean, I think a lot of folks were expecting, because of such rampant unemployment, that COVID was going to cause, you know, a buyer's market as opposed to the clear seller's market and the run on housing. I mean, I guess people weren't thinking of the psychological impact of it, where folks that did remain gainfully employed and had to work from home were like desperate to, like, you know, change their surroundings or, you know, live in a situation that had more of a conducive home work environment, so they didn't have to like sit in their living room table, you know, every day or whatever. But because of that run, I've been hearing all these horror stories of, you know, people literally waiting in line overnight to see, you know, open houses. And then the worst thing that I heard was that, you know, someone that I know, was going to make an offer on a house, and there was no way they could match the cash offer, the next up, you know, kind of most competitive cash offer. And the person said, well, if you waive your right to an inspection, you can get it for this, or like, you know, we'll accept that offer. And it's like, wow, that just seems really crooked to me. And like, it shouldn't be legal.
Sellers markets do things,
yeah,
that I don't like. So, we'll see how this whole thing plays out right now. But yes, please keep in mind, be aware, and tell us what you think about this whole thing. And we will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
Thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we have returned. One more note before we go into this. My segue here, for the record, fellow conspiracy realist, is the importance of transparency. You'll see what we mean in a moment. But another word, something I think often gets confused when people talk about the rise in house prices, is that it's a ripple or knock-on effect of the rising cost of materials, because the world really was on pause for a time, which means that the mills were not producing timber, which means that concrete production slowed down, construction in general slowed down. It's going to take a while to catch up, and that is simply a mathematical reality. But yes, transparency for appraisers. I think that's the best way to try to fix it. But today's final story, it is about transparency. You may have seen, folks, that about a week ago, after today's episode airs, 60 Minutes did something amazing. They mainstreamed the idea of disclosure. If you're listening to this show, and if you've listened for a number of years, then I have no doubt you are very familiar with that. The concept of disclosure simply describes the following. The idea that some private entity or a government or multiple governments has been aware of some sort of hidden technology. Sometimes you'll say built by time travelers, extraterrestrials, extra-dimensional entities, or just technology that human beings have indeed hidden from themselves. People finally admitting what that's about and then saying, hey, we ran into aliens in the 1930s. They were chill, but they told us to wait till 2021 because insert reason here. That kind of public speech is the dream of people who pine for disclosure. And for a long time, especially the last several years, we've been in kind of a wait and see. We've always had one shoe left to drop on the idea of disclosures. Multiple reports of things have been coming out, including the Pentagon's secret program to monitor what they call unidentified aerial phenomenon, I guess because UFO was too cool for government documentation. They had to make it a little more boring. I'm being rude to them. Really, it's because phenomenon means it doesn't necessarily have to be an object. Smart. We interviewed Jeremy Corbell, who is a great guy, who talked about some of this. I think originally we talked with him about off-world implants back in October of 2017. Do check out our interview with him and check out his newer documentaries as well. He had some sand in the story, and he was pretty prescient. Anyway, the 60 Minutes piece interviews Luis Elizondo, who all the ufologists in the crowd are familiar with. He had been running the ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and he has been working with Tom DeLonge, working with To the Stars Academy and several other places after his government career to, I wouldn't say popularize, but to draw attention to the fact that Uncle Sam does and has been monitoring and tracking stuff it sees in the sky and in the oceans, or the skies and the seas, if we want a little bit more, a little more alliteration there. And no one knows what it is. Officially, nobody in Elizondo's crew, nobody in the any branch of the U.S. government seems to really know what's going on. Multiple senators, multiple presidents have asked about it, and their answers have always been bupkis. Or maybe, very confidentially, if you're someone like Harry Reid, you'll get something like, well, Senator, if you can give us a few million dollars, we can try to figure out what's going on.
How about 22?
How about 22 million? Well, official. 22 million official dollars. So what you see if you watch this 60-minute segment, which I do highly recommend, did you guys see it? Did you guys watch it yet?
I haven't yet.
I've read the transcript, essentially, or the overview, but I've not watched it yet.
Yeah, I prefer reading transcripts personally. It goes so much faster than a television show. But Elizondo loosely categorizes the kinds of capabilities these things seem to have. They can do 600 to 700 G-forces, fly 13,000 miles an hour, evade radar. And then he says they can fly through air and water and possibly space. Interesting distinction, because they haven't documented these things, at least during ATIP's time, as traveling through space, just through the atmosphere. And another big one is no sign of propulsion. So Congress has ordered the Pentagon to come clean June 1st. I think it was maybe specifically Marco Rubio. But anyway, the Pentagon's on the hook. They've got to come out of their, you know, whatever spot they're in the world's largest office building, which is still a weird fact that trips me up. And then they have to say, here's what we have. Here's what we think is going to happen. For the more, I guess, weary in the crowd, this is just going to be another jam tomorrow, jam yesterday, never ever jam today situation, because previous disclosures haven't gone super far. You know what I mean? No one has said, we think there are extraterrestrials. But now we're at a point where people who work with the government, you know, as pilots, as intelligence agents, and so on, are genuinely saying, yes, something is definitely amiss. Everybody knows about it. We don't know what's going on. So I was thinking about this, and I wanted to this will be old news for people who are friends with me on Twitter, but I wanted to walk you guys through some possibilities and get your take. I see four main categories of probability here in no particular order. Number one, misidentified mundane phenomena. This is the number one explanation for the majority of civilian sightings, but it doesn't explain everything, because witnesses here are trained professionals with onboard tech explicitly designed to identify stuff in the sky.
Ben, did you just coin that term, mundane, misidentified phenomena, or is that like official?
That's what I think it is.
Yeah, like it's MMPs, it's about as sexy as unidentified aerial phenomena, you know?
Well, thanks, man. But I mean, it's true, though. Like, even the three of us who are familiar with this world, we would need to be really careful to make sure that we weren't, you know, mistaken about an optical illusion, right? Or ball lightning.
You know, I've mentioned this on the show before, and I swear to God, I'm going to dig it up. But I recently located a big bag of DV tapes that I used to have. I used to, like, you know, have a little handheld DV camcorder. And I was on a tour once and, you know, was shooting out the window of cornfields in Nebraska. I saw a thing. Like, it was like a hovering kind of like triangular, kind of like had like pointed corners, sort of transparent, but off in the distance. And it was very flat land. And it just seemed to hover there way off in the distance for quite a while. And I got it on video and I showed it to some people and they didn't know what the hell it was. But easily could have been some kind of optical illusion. It was a terrain that I wasn't used to. Maybe I wasn't used to the way things looked on the horizon. I don't know. I'm not dismissing it entirely, but I do want to find that tape and share it with you guys. But
Matt, take a crack at it.
I would love to, and I'm going to dig through. I've got the power supply for this camera. I just got to go through all these tapes. But yeah, I tend toward that explanation. But I know that there's a lot of technology and things that, you know, is probably stuff that we're developing that hasn't been, you know, hasn't been revealed to the public yet. Or that's my, I mean, to me, if it was from another country, it would have been, you know, shot down. So I don't know. I think it's one of those possibilities, either mundane, misidentified mundane phenomenon, or just stuff that we don't know about yet that we're catching a glimpse of because they're testing it.
Ooh, I'm going to go with false flag extraterrestrials.
Let me walk you guys through the other three okay. big genres of possibility. Okay. It's weird because I had them in this order. So number two possibility, human-made secret tech. It is inarguably true, right, that governments and some private entities have tech the public is not yet aware of.
Even a lot of Navy or airmen aren't aware of.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because this is the world of compartmentalized information, aka need to know. So yes, there is tech like that out there. I have surprisingly solid confirmation and corroboration that DARPA had video-capable smartphones in 1991, which is wild when you think about it. But, like, so that's one thing. That's not the same as a UFO, right? Or zero-point energy or something like that. But the other problem with the idea of human-made secret tech is that governments are run by humans currently, for now. And humans are, in general, just terrible at keeping secrets. They're, like, the worst at it. And this means that if you had highly advanced technology, and you're a military, for instance, which is an assumption, then the entire reason you keep that stuff secret is so that you could use it more effectively. And when it starts being witnessed in the field, you enter into a shot clock of sorts, right? The time starts ticking between the moment a stealth bomber is spotted and the moment enemy forces figure out what it is and how to shoot it from the sky. So it doesn't really, number two maybe doesn't get us there. My favorite, we'll just give this one space because I think all of us love it. Non-human technology is the most general way I could phrase it. It's the crowd favorite. It's the least likely. There's no proof yet. If there was any proof, it would be the single most explosive moment in human history. We would all be looking at each other and we would say, what a time to be alive. And no one would be being sarcastic about it that day, right? People would say, we're living the dream. And this would be the first time in history they mean it. That would be amazing.
The only problem is the dream is also a nightmare, pretty much.
Oh, yes.
Almost statistically. Yeah,
we might not have enough time to talk due to, like, dark forest theory. Why would something come from far away or from somewhere else, et cetera? And there's something else. You know, if no one can explain the sightings through these other explanations, then a lot of people are going to default to the explanation that it must be aliens or extra-dimensional beings, somehow non-terrestrial. But still, at this point, no official proof unless, you know, Bigelow comes forward and says, okay, we'll actually show you this stuff that we keep claiming we have. The fourth explanation, and sadly one of the most likely, an intentional distraction from ongoing geopolitical all-too-earthly woes. In several decades, it is going to suck even more to try to survive in certain parts of the world. And world governments are also very good at pulling a pay no attention to the man behind the curtain kind of vibe. This explanation, saying that UAP disclosure stuff and what's coming up next month is nothing more than a distraction, it is not based on proof. It's based primarily on historical precedent. And we can't say it's definitely the play now. We can't say it's a little cynical to assume it, but we can't call people who say it's a false flag crazy because it's proven. Governments have been happy, more than happy, to do this in the past, to try to – what's the phrase? To try to wag the dog kind of situation, you know, like it's no secret that various world leaders do engage in foreign conflicts as a way to shore up their domestic support. It's disgusting. It's reprehensible. And if I believed in an afterlife, I would wish them the worst for it. But it's a strategy that works very well. So that's where I see. So when I hear you guys talking about this, I hear, Noel, I hear you saying, number two, maybe some suppressed but all too human technology. And Matt, I hear you saying maybe a false flag. Number four, maybe it's something, what was that? Maybe it's a blue beam of sorts, right?
No, dude, I'm saying it's false flag to the 10th degree. We're talking actual extraterrestrials pretending to be Skunk Works. Advanced materials. No, I'm just joking. I don't know.
We're seeing a false flag by aliens to be other aliens. They're faking an alien invasion.
Or they're pretending to be advanced Skunk Works vehicles that only Skunk Works knows about. So then Skunk Works is suppressing all of this stuff and
and it's a hazing ritual, right? With like, okay, they're getting close to building machines that can take them out of the solar system. Time for the good old hazing. I don't know what an alien idea of haziness.
I'm being completely serious now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for all the joking and my dogs every time.
No, I think your dog is just a fan of us riffing. If you ever hear a barking dog, not just on this show, but in your life, and you want like a little tiny ego boost, tell yourself that dog is laughing at some joke you made earlier.
Oh, perfect. It just took a minute to sink in. I get it. Mm-hmm.
It's a nice little, you know, imaginary feather in my delusion cap.
Yeah, sure. I was just thinking weirdly about cross-species joke landing. There's something there. I'm not sure what it is yet. You can finish the joke later on your own time. So, but have you guys seen the triangle UFO video? I can't remember if we mentioned that on this show before. It was a newer one that got declassified, and dang, if that one isn't intense, well, man.
That's the one that made me think of the thing that I saw, because it really did look like almost like a polygon or something, you know, like it had this like old school 80s video game kind of like flight simulator vibe to it. And I'm going to stop talking about it until I can put my money where my mouth is and generate this tape for you guys. But that is the memory that I have. When I saw that video you're talking about, Matt, it immediately made me think of that thing that I saw.
Dude, it's a higher dimension. It's like a hypercube, guys. That's what we don't realize.
It's a hypercube?
Yeah.
Oh, no. We're going to time cube space. So, I mean, that's the thing that's interesting, too, because, you know, Noel, I get from when you've described this in the past, I feel like this definitely looked like a physical object to you, not simply a light,
yes.
Right? You could see the shape.
Edges.
And then, yeah, so that's what this video looks like, too. It, you know, when we were looking at some of these initial reports, we spent some time dissecting or parsing to the best of our abilities objects that came from cockpit imagery, right? And some of them looked like high-altitude detection devices, but they were missing the part of the balloon setup that actually detects stuff. You know what I mean? It didn't have all the sensory junk hanging in the bottom, and we couldn't tell whether or not it was moving and how based on these short clips. So, I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I'm stumped. I tried to approach it with a very rational mindset, and none of those four big genres of explanation that I landed on, with the information we have at this time, explain what on earth is happening, what off earth is happening. And again, the interesting thing is that nobody is saying they see these things in space yet. Pending that next report, all of these government officials are saying they're seeing things in the atmosphere and the oceans. And it is true that the U.S. military is experimenting with submersible drones, but these things don't – the way these things move, if the expert reports are correct and they aren't accidentally, you know, confusing something mundane for something extraordinary, the way these things move should be impossible under what we understand about current propulsion systems. And if it is human-made, if somebody did somehow keep a secret and the government doesn't know about it, as our friend Mad Scientist Pod brought up earlier online, that says some really terrifying things about military readiness.
Is that old Cogswell?
Yeah, Chris Cogswell. That is a gap that cannot be crossed.
Yeah. But, dude, you know, you've seen those old videos of NASA from the old shuttle missions. Come on. I've seen some weird stuff up there, man.
That's true. That is true. And astronauts do report seeing unexplained things.
Or they don't report anything because they can't. They're not allowed to, man.
Yeah, the first thing that happens, right as you descend back to Earth is a video starts playing. An unidentified man in a black suit and sunglasses. And he has pictures of your family. And he says it would be great to see them again. And all you have to do is not see some other stuff. Right?
And then is that what you saw, Ben?
Verbally consent. You know, just like sitting by the emergency plane exit, you have to give a verbal yes that you're down for it. Because otherwise, you know, reentry is tough. A lot of things don't make it. No, I don't think people get the last minute mafia hard sell right as they're returning to Earth. That's surely somebody would have said something about that.
Yeah. And I'm being somewhat joking about NASA, but there is questionable footage that is a bit weird that we looked at a while ago. Doesn't mean NASA is hiding anything necessarily, but it is a little weird.
So what would they – that's the thing. There's something – there appears to be something there. We'll learn more. I think the one of the best things we can reasonably hope for is data from sensory components, right, that are on board from sensory components. So like confirmation of infrared, which is already out there, a couple of other bells and whistles that might corroborate what people are seeing with their eyeballs. But honestly, you know, I have a hard time figuring out what would be released. You know, specifically, is it just going to be a mystery? And if there are really objects unidentified in the sky and they appear to be moving in intelligent ways or as though they are directed by an intelligent operator, then what are they doing up there? You know what I mean? They don't seem to be aggressive. If anything, it seems like reconnaissance, honestly, reconnaissance or test flights. But why? To what end? Let us know what you think, folks. I know it went a little long, but I believe this is important, and I know it is of utmost interest to a lot of our fellow listeners in the audience today.
They do appear to be monitoring military operations a lot.
Yes, and there were stories of increased UAP activity during the global nuclear buildup of the Cold War. There were also reports that some of these appearances were correlating with, and this is just a rumor, I don't have confirmation, but they were correlating with failure of some of those nuclear weapons.
I'd love to see if anyone is keeping track of the skies right around Israel and Palestine right now. Just there's so much, you know.
I feel like a lot of people are.
Well, there's so much hot combat occurring. I wonder if anyone is monitoring specifically for that. I'm monitoring the skies for anything strange right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Let us know if you're aware of that. Well, if you're aware of anything that can be released, because I'm certain there are a lot of eyes on there at state level and private entity, but will that information be shared? It's tough, you know. So let us know what you think about that. I would love to hear what people's superhero names would be. You know, don't give us your real one. We don't want to compromise you.
And trademark it if you come up with a really good one.
Mm-hmm. And then also let us know what you think solutions to this sort of systemic discrimination in the housing market might be. We'd love to hear from you. Always like to point it out. You are the best part of the show, specifically you. So you, specifically you, drop us a line. We're easy to find on the internet.
You can find us at Facebook and Twitter, where we're Conspiracy Stuff, Instagram, where we're Conspiracy Stuff Show. If you want to, you can find us as individual people. I'm on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown.
If you want to look ahead at some of the stuff I'm working on or thinking about, you can find me at Ben Bolin, HSW on Twitter. You can also find me at Ben Bolin, BOWLIN on Instagram. Matt, you change your Instagram about every couple weeks, right? What is it today?
I recently deleted Instagram from my phone, so sorry, that's all, folks.
That's a very long username.
Only after changing it to at unidentified mundane objects. Wait.
No. Dude, you can totally find me. Just look me up. I'm exclusively on Twitter now. It's at JulianGABC7.
Got it. And what about by telephone, if people wanted to reach us that way?
Hey, we got a phone number, you guys. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. You can give us a call. Yes, specifically you can give us a call anytime. Leave us a message. You'll hear Ben. He'll say you can turn back now, or you can leave a message. Once he says that, just go for it. You have 3 minutes. Please tell us what you would like for us to refer to you as. And, you know, leave your message in the beginning there. Please stick to the facts, just like we do. Here are the facts in the beginning. Then here's where he gets crazy at the end, maybe. That's kind of fun. I like that idea. And please let us know if we can use your voice on one of our listener mail episodes. That's very important. Now, We ask that you don't make multiple calls all at once. If you've got a lot to tell us or you want to share links or something, we highly recommend you use our email address. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.